Today is April 10th, 1985. My name is Tika Ward. I'm interviewing Maury Weidman. We are at Top House on Kenwood Hill, home of the Little Loom House. Our topic is Lou Tate and the Little Loom House. As we begin, tell me something about you.
I grew up in Louisville, in this end of town, and moved across the street from the Little Loom House when I was 16. But prior to that, I was basically an introverted type of person who spent most of my time alone, being introspective, and really didn't develop socially much until after I'd gone to college, and that basically takes care of that until I moved across the street from Lou Tate here on Kenwood Hill when I was 16, and then I met my first girlfriend, who also lived up on the hill here in the log cabin on top of the hill, which I forgot what they used to call it. Hill House, I think, or the House of Hill Repute. But Lou Tate actually was a matchmaker between me and Ellen Tenney. And she set up a date at Louisville Downs, which was also the first time I'd ever gone to a racetrack of any kind. And she arranged it such that I and Ellen were both at the same place at the same time. And from that point on, we became pretty much steadies, I guess you'd say, for the next, well, until the end of high school. And then we maintained a relationship through most of college. And then even after, we'd both gone our separate ways as far as different males and females. We still, maintain sporadic contact, on occasion.
When you first moved across the street and you saw these cabins, did you know anything about them?
No, I didn't know anything at all about them. And I don't really remember any specifics in terms of meeting Lou, but she was always out working in the yard, and I was always out working in our yard, because that's the way I would work off my adolescent energy, I guess. Post-adolescent energy, or whatever you want to call it. And she was always really outgoing, so I'm sure that, I don't remember the specifics, but I'm sure that she probably introduced herself to me.
And then you started coming over here.
Yeah, I started coming over, and I never really minded work, and my family situation wasn't the best, and I found Lou almost immediately to be a real warm and inviting person, not only that, but intellectually stimulating. So I started coming up and just talking to her about a wide variety of things, not weaving, because weaving never really interested me.
You were 16. What year was this?
Oh, well, I'm 36 now, so let's see. That's 16 years ago, right? So whatever 85 minus 16 is, which I find difficult to do in my head. Let's see. 75.
You all just had fun talking.
Well, we spent a lot of time talking, and then she was never bashful about asking people to do work for her, so I didn't mind. In fact, I always have liked to do physical labor, and in fact, that's what I just spent my whole week doing, building a playhouse for my kids. I'm half wrecked right now. But there was always certainly a lot to do, and I guess she sort of felt, I think, or it was easy for her to have a family type feeling for somebody, or for lots of people, and that along with the family, certain obligations come along, and she would take on a parental role and provide tasks for her to do, but then she would also provide guidance, I guess, would be the main thing that she did. And she used to always harp on the fact that the main reason she taught weaving wasn't to teach weaving, but was to teach values. Yeah.
Did
to her students.
Did you ever observe her with the students?
Oh, yeah, lots of times. But like I said, at that point in my life, I wasn't particularly interested in doing things with my hands. In fact, I didn't start doing things with my hands until I was in my 20s, and now that's practically all I do. But
you could overhear her talking to the students.
Mm-hmm. I did do a couple of things on the limbs, but it just was always too tedious for me. I still wouldn't be interested in weaving. It's just driving me crazy.
I've heard that she would give history lessons. She would incorporate that into the teaching.
I don't specifically remember, like, in terms of a weaving class that was up here, anything like that. But I wasn't around that much, you know, when lessons were going on. But I do know that we had a lot of conversations that involved history. I mean, she was, I think, very aware of history. Of course, I think she had a degree in it. Yeah, and I think she was very international minded too, and literate in that way.
Did she ever tell you about her childhood?
Not really. In a way, she was always, her past was always sort of mysterious. I always wondered whether she had a boyfriend at one point or not, or what really was the story on her being single, whether she decided overtly to be, or whether it just didn't work out for her over the years. But in a way, I feel like it's probably the best thing for her, because she's such an independent person. And you know, she's the type of person who you could be a friend to until the end, but I don't think anybody would want to live with her. And that's not an insult. That's just that she was so strong-willed and had such a good idea, I think, of what she wanted to do with her life, where very few people do. They have a good idea of what they want to do with their lives, and I think she had a very well-formed idea of what she wanted to do with her life.
Did she ever talk about Berea?
Yeah. I can't remember much in the way of specifics, but my impression is that what she said about Berea was very favorable. I think she looked upon that as a really, really good time in her life. But beyond that, I can't really remember many specifics.
Did she ever talk about going on a mule and recovering drafts and talking to the people about their weaving?
I don't really remember that, but you know, she could have, and we had so many conversations, and I'm a sort of a forgetful person anyhow.
Michael Kirk told me that you all made some steps over here.
Yeah, we rented an 18-foot flatbed truck, which was about twice the size that we needed, twice as big a truck as we needed. And she had some kind of connection with the L&N Railroad, so that we could go get some old railroad ties. We went and loaded the truck up, and the truck was so high that by the time we got the truck loaded up, we were, you know, about ready to cash in our chips. And then we had to drive it up on the Possum Path, which was practically only a cow path at that point. And the truck just barely fit on it. We were waiting for it to just tumble over the side of the hill. But we got it up there and unloaded the truck, and then basically shored up the side of the hill that was coming down because of the poor drainage. And then I think that it was possibly that same year that we built the old concrete retaining wall. I don't know if it's still there or not. And signed it, of course. But,
did you ever go to any of the open houses?
Oh, yeah.
What were they like?
Well, see, I hadn't thought about those in years. Basically, I guess, no, they were informal. I don't see Lou as a formal person, far from it. I mean, I think in a way, she could get really uptight about the houses up here, and you know, and the future of them, and you know, was really worried about that, and I think would get exasperated with the direction of society in general. You know, I think she'd get exasperated about that, and I think that made her real nervous. But on a one-on-one basis, I think she's just a real informal person, I think, and had the gift of gab wouldn't be the word for it, because that's too trivial. That would be trivializing the way she was. She just, I guess you'd say she was a genteel person, but not in genteel in the sense that, you know, sometimes that would have a connotation of artificiality, but I think she didn't have an ounce of of artificiality in her body, mind, and soul. She was, what you saw is what you got. I mean, she was right there in front of you. And she didn't mind disagreeing with you at all if she did disagree with you. I mean, she wouldn't pull any punches. She wouldn't be offensive. I mean, I don't think she was an offensive person. I mean, I think some people considered her to be overbearing, and maybe at times she was, but I think that just comes from, like I said earlier, having a really good idea of what she wanted to do and having a really good idea of the direction she was moving in. And I think she was really impatient with people who tended either to be wishy-washy or confused about what they were doing.
At the open houses, would you ever see the sheep? Spinning wheels?
I missed the sheep.
What kinds of activities? What about the dying? Were you ever here for any of the dying?
I was here when, what's her name? Betsy Dinas, who also works for the library, which I do, runs one of the branches. I remember her and her husband running a tie-dye thing up here and bringing in all sorts of weeds and pounding them up or whatever and steeping them in large cauldrons and, you know, making natural dyes. That's something else that I never really got personally involved in myself. I liked being around the activity mainly just because I came from a family that was in general extremely introverted, and there really wasn't any kind of fun going on. In fact, just the opposite. And being and having this resource right across the street from me, at least from the time I was 16, and then every day, of course, it was available to me until I was 18 when I graduated from high school. Well, of course, I went to University of Louisville my first year, so, and lived at home most of that time, so it was readily accessible to me. But then I went to school in Wisconsin and only at the University of Wisconsin after that point, and then didn't spend as much time here, although in the summers I did come back, and Christmas. And whenever I would come in for the holidays, usually I would call Mike first, and we'd go do something. Or while Mike was on his way over, or while I was getting ready to go see Mike, I'd come up and say hi to Liv, and then, you know, I said earlier that she was sort of like a parent, which she was, but she was also a friend, you know, sort of a combination of the two, because there were many times when I would just walk across the street and go down to the liquor store far and buy a bottle of wine, and we'd both sit down and have it. And there was never any lull in the conversation.
How did you find out that she had arranged for you to meet Ellen Tenney at Louisville Downs?
I don't really remember. I imagine that Ellen told me after we got to know each other a little better. I'm sure that's what it was, in fact. But I'm sure that we wouldn't have been afraid to admit that, you know, she had set it up.
As you observed her over the years, did you notice, did she change?
Well, the only way in which I think that she changed, and of course this was during the time when I hardly saw her at all, because I got, after I came back here from Wisconsin, I was wrapped up in my own life so tightly for so many years that I saw her hardly at all, so most of the information I got was secondhand, and it seemed like she was ruffling a lot of feathers about trying to get I don't even know what the foundation's called.
The Lou Tate Foundation,
yeah,
Incorporated?
Yeah, getting all that set up and arranging plans to see to it that the houses here would survive, sort of in the tradition that she'd set up. That I knew that there was some conflict going on between her and some of the others involved in setting it up, and I can see how there would be too, just because of the way she was. But and then one day she came into the library, and I just happened to run into her. You know, we passed a few words, and I said something like, "Oh, how are you?" And she said, "Oh, I've got cancer, it's terminal." Just like she was giving me the time of day, you know, it was like a big deal, you know. And, you know, I don't think she had any fear of death whatsoever. In fact, she told me a story once about if I remember correctly, I think she had a heart problem also, and that apparently she'd been near death more than once. And apparently in one of those episodes, the story that she had told me was similar to some of the near-death experiences you read about in assorted books and magazine articles and whatever, and how she was disembodied and had this warm feeling and was totally comfortable. And she said, well, if that's what it means to die, then I'm ready. I mean, she just didn't, I mean, that wasn't her exact words, but that was the gist of the feeling.
What did the neighbors think of her?
I don't really know, because the only neighbors really that I knew up here were the ones who were involved directly with her, or Ellen, who was also, you know, Ellen and her parents had been good friends of Lou for many years. And, well, actually, I do remember one household here. In fact, my next door neighbor who, I remember Lou talking about being received with some hostility by them because they thought the place was kind of a dump, I guess, basically. And in some ways it was, really, because she didn't have the money really to keep it up like she wanted to. But, you know, just because there may have been little piles of stuff here and there, I think that overall the place, you know, if anything, it added, you know, to the hill. I mean, it was just, I had, you know, an immediate attraction to it. There's something about it. The place had, she had given this whole place an aura, and she'd had the money to fix it up, or I'm sure she would have fixed it up, but it still wouldn't have had a shiny, brash look, because that's just not the way she was. She was more like earth tones.
Did you ever, I've heard about the chili suppers and the potluck suppers. Did you ever go to any of those?
I don't think I ever went to a potluck, and really, I don't know if this is what you mean, but several different times she would have chili suppers for it seems like the ones I went to, you know, would be me and then a group of mutual friends. Like, it would be me, maybe Ellen, Mike, Kirk, and maybe whoever he was dating at the time. It's all sort of confused, but I remember having small chili get-togethers and her talking about her secret family recipe of a can of this and a can of that to make a chili.
She would tell you all how to make the chili? Or not
more or
really?
Less. I mean, she was making a joke about the family recipe, you know, like it was sophisticated, but, you know, it was just, and then she would say, well, you put a can of this and a can of that, so it's not like she labored over it, but, you know, it was good.
Would this be in Bottom House?
Right.
What was that like?
The house?
Bottom House. Esta.
I love, as far as interiors of any one of these houses, that the room that she lived in was my favorite, with the large, you know, the massive limestone, I think it was limestone fireplace. It's been more than 10 years since I've been in there. And with, you know, all the dark wood inside and the bay window on the one side of the room. And if I remember right, I think she had, what I remember is an oriental carpet on the floor, or it was a really detailed pattern, I think, on the floor. And it just had a real comfortable and homey feel to it, which was almost alien to me because I wasn't raised in a homey environment, and it was really comforting to me. That's the thing that was really good about this whole place for me. It was that, you know, it was basically a comfort. I mean, there were times when I'd come over and I would get a little irritated because I wouldn't feel like really like doing the job that Lou had in mind for me. But, you know, that was nothing really, because it was just a comfort for me to be up here. I mean, I spent many hours up here just, you know, chopping wood. And seems like I was chopping wood. I don't know why I would have been. I guess a tree fell down, or a tree would fall down every once in a while. And it seems like I was doing a lot of chopping in those days.
When you said, excuse me.
No, it's okay.
When you said that she would try to pass on values,
mm-hmm.
What kinds of values?
Well, I think her values were basic Christian values, although I don't think her religious outlook was necessarily that doctrinaire. I don't think she was a dyed-in-the-wool Christian, but her values were basically Christian. And, you know, basically the golden rule, and what she took very seriously, you know, treating people well, being persistent and disciplined, and about covetous. I think she had a very simple approach to life. I don't mean simplistic and in the way that the term has been applied to Ronald Reagan lately. that would be more like simple-minded. She wasn't simple-minded at all. But I think she just felt that the basic Christian values were a valid, you know, approach to life. And that's, although I don't know if I'm a Christian or not. I guess basically I'm not a Christian, but in terms of values, I feel that the basic Christian values pretty much cover it all in terms of what I hold to be valuable.
She had a car, and she gave it to Michael Karp, and then
Michael
gave
it to me first.
She gave it to you.
She had a 1954 Ford station wagon, which she gave to me when I was in when I had come back here after dropping out of the University of Wisconsin before going back again. She gave it to me, and then I was here for about a year, and I didn't want the car anymore. I also had another car, and I gave it to Mike. He drove it for a while, and then he gave it to his friend Carl, and I don't know what Carl did with it. Haven't heard. The thing that these conversations have reminded me of is that I'm sitting in the midst of all these looms, and it just reminds me of how uninterested I am in weaving. And after hanging around Lou for, I guess on a real regular basis, for something approaching 10 years or so, I only made one or two pieces, and when I did that, I didn't enjoy it at all. I hated it, in fact. And I really, and to this day, you know, I haven't the slightest desire to weave. And I look at these looms, and I can appreciate the way they're made. I might, at this point in my life, I might like to make a loom, because since I was regularly involved with Lou, I've become very good with my hands, whereas at that time I was a total klutz. But I just think it's interesting that I kept coming back for more contact with Lou, and most people think of her as a weaver, and really I couldn't have cared less whether she's a weaver or not. I mean, she would talk about some of the pieces that she would have, used to have hanging up around here. Maybe they still are now. They look very complicated to me, and she'd start talking about the types of looms, and I'd get some real vague idea of the complexity of weaving a pattern like some of those on the wall right over there. And it just, to me, it just sounds like utter torture. I can't imagine how anybody could be motivated to do that. I mean, I can appreciate it, you know, different strokes and all that, but I never would do it. And over the years, I would be even less interested in weaving now than before. And then again, that's not a put down of her in any way. That's just my particular personality. But and I guess she did mean what she said in terms of teaching values. Of course, she wasn't teaching values to me through weaving. I think she was, she tended to take people under her wing, and she took me under her wing as sort of a son-brother, you know, at the same time, son-brother-friend. All of those sort of mixed in together. And I think I had a sincere enough quality and a harmless enough quality that, she was at ease around me, and not to mention the fact that, you know, I would do work for her. And I don't think she ever would come right out and say it. I mean, she'd give you a sort of a little hug when you came in after being gone for 3 or 4 months or something like that, you know. Isn't that way she was kind of stiff, I think, physically. I don't think she was the person who ever learned how to be openly physically affectionate. But she would always be, you know, verbally excited. I mean, you knew, you would know that you were welcomed. You know, there would be no doubt about it. And and she would never come right out and say, oh, gee, I really missed you and all that stuff. And if there's anything that might smack of self-pity also, she wouldn't do. Now, I think maybe that may have changed somewhat toward the end of her life, but then, I wasn't involved in that, and I don't really understand all the factors involved with that. I think, you know, part of it was is that she was probably in a lot of physical pain, because when I was coming over here, she was a good deal younger, you know, than when she did die. And if I remember correctly, I think she did have arthritis also. I don't know if her heart condition was a continuing problem or not. But even then, she would, you could tell that she was in pain. There's just no doubt about it. You could see it on her face. I mean, you know, she was in pain. And she had the type of drive to work on through that. And I think one of her ways of dealing with the pain was to sort of chain smoke pell-mell cigarettes. No filter. I'd bum one from her every once in a while. Choke for a couple of hours afterwards, but she could inhale those things just like they were air. You know, it was nothing to her. She must have had calluses on her lungs. But I don't think her cancer was lung cancer. I don't think that's what got her.
So obviously it was beyond the weaving and the looms that attracted you to Lou Tate and to the Three Cabins. What was it?
Right. And like I just said, weaving was nothing that I was interested in. And I kept coming back because she offered something to me, which I think in a certain way we were sort of soulmates, in that I had always been the type of person who thought about the big questions, you know, like, why are we here? And all the types of questions that are not popular things to pursue these days. People are supposed to spend their time distracting themselves from the serious nature of life rather than trying to deal with it. And I think that's something that Lou found disgusting, and she wasn't afraid to hit life head on, and that she would questions of meaning, questions of death, questions of life. In the types of things that she expressed, which kept me coming back, were what I interpret to be her searching for the actual value of life and the meaning of life. I think she had an abiding faith, which she didn't describe in real doctrinaire Christian ways. And when I think back upon her descriptions of her religious faith, she seemed to be pretty much a skeptic in terms of organized religions. And I don't remember her ever... I remember her talking about the miracle of Christ as a... more as a beautiful tradition rather than necessarily something she specifically believed in, although I don't really know, that's something which she seemed to almost automatically steer away from, and that is revealing the actual details of her personal faith. And I think, and like I said, this is just my interpretation, but I think that her reason for doing that was that she didn't feel like she had the right to push herself on anybody else, to push her faith on anybody else. Plus, I think that, you know, she probably didn't have it honed down to that many specifics, and I think she's probably the type of person that felt like, you know, as I do, that, you know, I really can't get it down to that many specifics in terms of, you know, messiahs and saviors and what's the word? or avatars. You know, maybe there have been messiahs, and maybe there will be more. But I think her main approach to life, which was in a way overlapped with mine, is that she felt like there was a meaning in life, and that the purpose of life was to seek that out and get as close to it as you can, even though she knew that you'd never be able to figure it out to the point where you could put it on paper.
This is the end of side one, tape one. This is the beginning of side two, tape one.
Well, the things I really liked about Lou was not the fact that she was a weaver, but the types of feelings that she generated in me, and the fact that she looked at life as a way to gain faith through a personal search. And I think it was really important for her to make her own decisions, and not to fall into a group of people that could be categorized in any way. In terms of, I'm speaking mainly now about religious groups. I don't think she could ever fit into that, but I think she had a really strong desire to unify herself with whatever it is that has created us, you know, the human race. And I think she had an abiding faith that whatever that is was really good and affectionate. And I think that she was more than satisfied that was a truth. You know.
This is the end of the interview, side two, tape one.